Guaranteed to be more delectable than Cinnamon Toast Shrimp, welcome back to Motorsport 101.
Oh, by the way, hi, I'm Andre Harrison. Welcome to episode 293 of Motorsport 101. And while I order some therapy, I'll also break down the set list here. On this week's episode, we're going to quickly talk over Sebring, because that was a fun IMSA race we had to deal with. But also, we're going to be going through part two of what we like to call season preview season here on Motorsport 101. We had Formula One last week. That's up in its entirety now as we speak on where all good podcasts are available. But now we're talking about our two-wheel brothers in MotoGP. We can boil it down to basically in 60 seconds. We don't really have any idea. Except maybe Marquez.
And we like it that way.
It's brilliant. It's perfect. I couldn't ask for anything better. So we'll be breaking down and previewing all of that over the next 90 minutes or so, probably a bit less, but hey, we'll work this out as we go along. With me, as always, we have RJ O'Connell. Hello, sir.
The thing I meant to left out of the intro was the disclaimer that Shrimpdale's guy is a genuinely bad dude. It's either this or I make a topical joke about the Suez Canal, or rather, the Suez Cantnal.
We're off to a good start here again, folks. Yeah. We can only get better from here. King, save the show, would you?
No. I'm just gonna put the show off to the side and trap it through.
Hitting us with that hard denial like that one TNA pay-per-view. Restart the match! No!
No! And Cam Buckley is here as well. Hello, sir.
Hi, everyone. I'm just trying to figure out how they're going to schedule the next America's Cup in the Suez Canal in the middle of a shipping route.
It would certainly be entertaining. I will not deny that. It would definitely be fun.
Hey, my buddy's got a lake here. They can have that boat race around. It's a big old lake.
Oh, I hate it here. Help. Okay.
Hilfer.
Oh dear. Right, I'll get the general housekeeping out of the way real quick. We're on youtube.com/motorsport101. We're on facebook.com/motorsport101. We're on Twitter at motorsport_101. And our personal handles are on the screen if you're watching us on YouTube right now. If you're not, they're in the description down below. Or you can, we'll just tell you them. It's at Harrison101HD, at RJ O'Connell, at Ryan Eric King, and at CBuckley917. And if you really like us, you can back us financially on Patreon. Patreon.com/motorsport101. $5 gets you early access to all the audio versions of our shows. $10, you can upgrade for the video versions of all our episodes early, as well as access to the supporters club of our Discord server where you can listen to these episodes live as they're being recorded. Big audience tonight, everybody. Shout out to Finley, Jason, Lewis, Sasha and Vic. Hope you guys enjoy the show tonight. I think this is the first time I ever get to say this on the show. This episode's brought to you by a sponsor. We're brought to you by Fantasy GP this week, and they reached out to us because we're plugging our own fantasy league on there. Fantasy F1 is a fantastic, Fantasy GP I should say, is a fantastic fantasy Formula 1 site where you can challenge leagues, challenge your friends, as well as compete for great prizes. And we have a competition for you as well. So if you join the Motorsport 101 Fantasy League on the site, the access code will be in the description down below on this episode, and on our last episode, the F1 season preview, so you can check it out on there as well. I'll read it out right now in case you guys have, are listening already on this one. It's 51846052, 51846052. You can join us on there. The winner, i.e. the best person that isn't one of our hosts, basically, because there is a possibility one of us hosts might end up winning it, bit bent, we don't want that, so the highest scoring non-podcast host or the league winner, whatever comes first, will win a cap or t-shirt of their choice from any motorsport franchise out there, and we'll get it shipped out to you as well. We also have 3 Pro Elite accounts to give away on the site as well. It includes a whole bunch of enhanced features such as live scoring, a bigger budget, and who doesn't want a bigger budget when playing fantasy sports, I think it's 43 swaps without losing points on your current total, so genuine competitive advantages to having a Pro Elite account. So there's three of those to give away.
An exemption to the budget cap.
Oh, yeah. Who doesn't want that? If you're a general manager, this is the stuff of dreams we're giving away right here. So we have three of those accounts to give away. All you've got to do is comment on our Formula One season preview part one. The first video of that triple header we're putting up on that. Just leave a comment and subscribe to the channel. I will be checking, so no cheating. But we'll pick three names out of a hat and you will all get Pro Elite accounts. So like I said, bigger cap, more picks, genuine competitive advantages here. So, you know, we're totally straight down the middle with this. But big thanks to Fantasy GP for reaching out for us for this week's show. And yeah, best of luck. And you get to compete against the rest of us.
Solid ad read, by the way.
I completely ripped that off the cuff. Like, I've been taking lessons from Katie Nolan on sports. She's my hero. I was completely ripped off the top. So, yeah. Thank you. Thank you very much. I'm here all week. This is my finest presenting moment on Motorsport 101. I actually sounded like a semi-professional podcaster. You're all meant to laugh. But,
sponsors, potential sponsors for future episodes, hit us up. You know where to find us.
Yeah, email's in the description. But yeah, before we get into the proper MotoGP season preview, I should say, Cam, talk to me about Sebring, because this was quite the roller coaster of a race for IMSA this weekend.
Quite the roller coaster, and I know that the roller coaster over all those bumps would really have bothered a whole bunch of people on the internet who read a certain article. But let's not talk about them for a minute. Well, you guys were a race early on the pick, but the French pain train, the number 5 Mustang sampling JDC Miller Cadillac, takes the overall win. Sebastian Bourdais, Loic Duval, and Tristan Vautier.
Do we get partial credit for calling half of the Florida 36 hours?
No.
A third?
Hey, I picked the overall winner of Daytona the first time. Quick rundown of the finishing order in DPI. I say number 5 won. The number 55 Mazda, second only car to finish on the podium in both legs of the Florida 36 hours. The number 60 Shank Acura, much better showing in that race than there was at Daytona, where they just never really looked like they were on the pace. The number 10 Wayne Taylor car, which looked strong early, gave us one of our early Scotty contenders from a fantastic pass around the outside of Kevin Magnussen by Ricky Taylor into turn.
Art.
Can an overtake make you horny? Yes. They finished fourth after contact with a GT car, damaged their right side intercooler, and the number 01 Chip Ganassi Cadillac finished fifth after what was again another strong run, but Scott Dixon is mortal. He had an incident with a GT LM BMW, and it cost his team the race.
Dixon cost his team a win. I mean, how often do we say that about Scott Dixon in anything he drives?
How often do you hear this, though, Cam? Chad Knaus can't count.
Yes, you see, there was a car that had finished third, the number 48 Ally Cadillac, but it didn't finish third on the road.
It didn't finish third on the final results because drive time.
Chad Knaus forgot how to count. And they went 50 seconds over on Simon Pagenaud's drive time, dropping them in an automatic disqualification to last in class.
I have to say, that's a very harsh penalty for what that was. I mean, don't get me wrong, letter of the law and all that. But an immediate disqualification for 50 seconds over? That's so cruel! It is what it is. You know, I haven't got too strong an opinion on it. Yeah, I just have to point that out. I felt hard for the team on that one, and yeah, like it was bad. I think as well as that incident was bad. I think it was Kevin Magnussen was on Instagram talking about the fact that they were unlucky and didn't win that one, and I think it was Jimmy Johnson himself in the comments that said I felt bad for you guys out there. Yeah, a lot of post race spice on that one. A lot of pissed off people. A lot of guys ruined missed opportunities on that one. But yeah, definitely it was a
yeah. Okay. And as our final card to cover in DPI, what the hell is up with Pipo Durrani?
I don't know. The incident that, in question. That...
I couldn't. That move is really smart if you forget the fact that there's been a concrete wall on that line for about 40 years.
If no gap, car. That's the line.
If
right.
If gap, wall. It's just another. It's another situation where he puts his car in a position where everyone else has to get out of his way, or there's going to be a cataclysmic accident. And this time it wiped out both ride side suspensions on his car and basically dropped his team out of any contention. Later they had a mechanical failure which dropped them out of the race, out on track. LMP2, not a whole lot happened. LMP3, not a whole lot happened. GTLM,
the 79 I think a Porsche one. I'm going out on the limb.
The story on of pace the GTLM
alone.
Yeah, I was about to say the development of this race is that a BMW knocked a Corvette out of the way and a Porsche went through to win.
My man is chugging his entire drink in celebration.
I wish it was Hennessy.
Oh, again? Again? Really?
Again. No, we're saving that for a better occasion. And in GTD, we had quite a lot of attrition. A Lamborghini had brake failure and took someone else off the road through the air into the tire barrier.
That was an awful-looking accident. Thankfully, everybody all right, but in real time, that was nasty.
Yep, and Porsche got a 1-2 in that class with the number 9 Lumberjack car winning over the number 16, I think, Wright Motorsport car?
Yes.
Yes.
Faf Motorsports wins the class. Wright Motorsports finishes second. Good race. Watch the replay on Nibs's YouTube channel. I'm sure it'll be up by now if it isn't up already. And
don't repave this track. It's great just how it is.
Oh, Lord.
We don't endorse certain Jalopnik columns on the matter.
We do endorse Jalopnik columns about the Daytona USA car in a fighting game.
that I can get
throwing
by.
Hands, woke, throwing boxing gloves, bespoke, throwing tires.
Throwing tires. That's what we like to hear on this show.
I'm going to go off script and finish this portion of the show up with two notes. One, Shane Van Gisbergen is unstoppable. He's perfect in supercars. With a broken collarbone and ribs, this man cannot be beat. He swept the Sandown Super Sprint.
We had to clean the walls of the Discord down from Adam Johnson in excitement after that race happened. He's the world's biggest Shane Van Gisbergen fan, and he went ballistic after this race.
It's true. He's been in that man's corner since he was driving for Techno.
Yeah!
Shane has been ridiculous this year, and I don't see him losing a race in the near future, which is kind of scary to say.
Yeah, that's the thing. When Scott McLaughlin left, everybody's just like, now this is anybody's championship, Shane Van Gisbergen.
Nope.
Bet.
No! Not at all, second, and go ahead, RJ.
The second thing I want to mention from this weekend, we had a fight in a NASCAR race, but it's not worthy of a Fight Club segment because one of the participants, resident NASCAR Xfinity's fuckboy, Noah Gragson, decided to make like Domino's and offer up some contactless delivery
in his
pit lane scuffle with Daniel Hemric.
Look, if you reverse into someone else's pit box and crush the front end on their car, I mean, dude, you had it coming.
That's one of the acceptable reasons for me to start fisticuffs, personally.
To be fair, it wasn't even deliberate. It was just really stupid.
Yeah, it wasn't. Yeah, that's the thing. We love dunking on Noah Gragson here. He is, well, let's just say it how it is, Nikita Mazepin light. So we don't hold back on him, but in this case, not deliberate, just idiotic.
Stupid.
On a more somber note, in the time period between our last recording and this one, we lost 1988 Le Mans co-winner Johnny Dumfries after a short illness.
Yeah,
he was 62 years old. Had his time in F1 alongside Ayrton Senna at the 1986 Lotus team, and 62 is no time to go. That sucks.
Indeed. That's,
yeah.
Went back and listened to his episode of Beyond the Grid as well. It's a great listen. So do go out of your way to see if you want to know a little bit more about what Dumfries was all about. Rest in power to him. And, of course, our thoughts with his loved ones. Should we get into the main event here, folks?
Yes, sir.
Yes, sir. Right after this, we'll be reviewing the previewing, the 2021 MotoGP.
Can you believe that Aventia scored a 1-2 in the championship?
I know! Whoever would have thought that Luca Marini would break the glass ceiling like that? Did you know he's Valentino Rossi's half-brother?
That's my line, damn it!
Got him!
This is how I respond to that.
Alrighty-ho then. Okay, so 2021 MotoGP season. This is going to be spicy, to say the least. Because, like I said, I think the core four is we don't really have an idea who we definitely think is going to win this yet. And there's many facets as to why we've come to that conclusion.
My reasoning is that I did no research or homework or prep for any of this. I'm just going to jump headfirst in the season once we get on track. And whatever happens, happens. Because I know it's going to be entertaining.
We tried to figure out some of it. Me and Cam tried to figure out some of this, and even we're not 100% sure ourselves yet, and that's kind of what makes this first race this weekend so fascinating.
I'm of the opinion that the entire season hinges on one doctor's appointment. More on that in a minute.
More on that later. Yes. Just so you know, in case you didn't know, the full calendar already is available in certain places, but quick rundown of that. We've got two races in Canada to start us out, March 28th and April 4th, then Portimao, April 18th. There's a very important doctor's appointment in between those two rounds. More on that in a minute. May 2nd, we're going back to Jerez. May 16th, we are at Le Mans. Mugello! Hopefully with fans on May 30th. Maybe. Italy's kind of going through it right now. We don't know. Stay tuned on that one. But hopefully Mugello will be back on May 30th. No guarantees. June 6th, Catalunya. Then we've got the Saxon Ring coming back on June 20th. And then Assen back-to-back on June 27th. That's been moved slightly due to restrictions on large gatherings in around the area. That's why the World Superbike round's also been moved further on down the year as well. Again, a year later than build, but hopefully the Kaimi Ring will make its debut on July 11th in Finland. Then we have the Red Bull Ring in Spielberg on August 15th, the British Grand Prix at Silverstone on August 29th, then Aragon on June 12th. That's back-to-back with the Misano Grand Prix in San Marino on September 19th. Then we got the Flyaways, October 3rd, the Japanese Grand Prix at Motegi. Then hopefully the Thai Grand Prix at Buriram on October 10th. October 24th, we actually now have a break because we have four flyaway rounds instead of three now. October 24th, we have Phillip Island. They're probably the main event of the year. Who doesn't love Phillip Island at this point? A week after that, October 31st, we have the Malaysian Grand Prix back at Sepang. Hopefully they'll be out of their state of emergency by then. And on November 14th, the season finale at Valencia. There could still be reasons to change. We still have
a lot of this calendar is tentative for obvious reasons.
Indeed, and there's still two postponed rounds on the table. The Grand Prix of the Americas at COTA may or may not still happen, depending on what goes down in Texas. We'll have to wait and see on that one. And they are still currently rebuilding the paddock in Argentina after their horrible fire, so their round got delayed. They are actually saying tentatively that they should be back sometime in maybe later on in the year, maybe October, November sort of time. Fingers crossed the track will be rebuilt by then. We still have, as well, Indonesia as a reserve round as a possibility as well. I know Indonesia are are literally foaming at the mouth to get a Grand Prix. They are really, really excited about this. Shout out to Lewis in the chat who mentioned as well, there is a hard cap of 20 races. We currently stand at 19. So there's only room for one of these three races. So if the sport wants 20, we might get 20, but it will not be any more than that. More on that, obviously, as we go on through the year. So let's go manufacturer by manufacturer on this one. Now, RJ, I'll let you choose because you wrote most of this. Do you want to go bottom or do you want to go from the top or from the bottom?
Last time on our F1 season preview, we went from the bottom to the top. I think it's only fair that we switch things up a bit and go from the top to the bottom. Team
right.
Suzuki X-Star. Yoann Mir, the reigning, defending, undisputed MotoGP Premier Class World Champion at Alex Rins. Yoann Mir's consistency was the only sure thing in such an improbable 2020 season. Question is now, can the sensational 23-year-old world champion do it again in 2021? Moreover, might a healthy Alex Rins, who had an incredible resurgence in the second half of the season, take that same leap and enter the title picture himself? Trey, your thoughts on our favorite team that has cashed in money in the bank this past season?
They're a very interesting team. I mean, not mentioned as the big restructure they've had. Their main boss, the focal point of the team, Davide Brivio, is no longer with them. There's been a big restructuring at Suzuki. A lot of different guys stepping up in different roles across the board. There was no direct replacement for Brivio running that team overall. So that's going to be fascinating to keep an eye on. They didn't particularly set like testing times alight. We'll get to more about what I call the preseason champions later on in the piece. But they, like, I think they're still desperately trying to work on qualifying pace as well as we go along. So there's a lot of moving parts to Suzuki. They're still quietly confident. I know Simon Crafar wrote a really lengthy piece about it on the website of MotoGP.com saying, don't sleep on Suzuki, they're still really good, and they probably will be really good on Sunday once the lights go out and we'll see where they place. Because the funny thing is, in my opinion, if somebody held a gun to my head right now and said, Dre, give me a title champion, I would say Alex Rins. I think Rins has got all the tools needed to potentially win a championship. And I think at his best, he's a little better than Mir. But again, the way this season plays out, it's anyone's guess. But and I could say that about six or seven dudes in this field, which we'll cover in a minute. But I still, there is no reason to think that Mir can't retain, and there's no reason for me to think that Rins can't win this title. No, I have no reason to doubt anything that's going on in Suzuki's camp. What do you reckon? What do you make of it, Cam?
I tend to agree. I mean, that was kind of the theme of Suzuki last year, wasn't it? No one really picked them to win much of anything until suddenly they were leading the championships and running away with them.
Yeah.
They're a very low-key team in that regard, and not many changes to the bike. If it ain't broke, why fix it? And right. I think that the things to watch this year, as far as their riders are concerned, is can Rins stay healthy? Because he competed for most of last year with 1.5 shoulders at best. And can Mir take that next step in terms of raw speed? He's very good racecraft. He's very good consistency. He doesn't have the raw pace of someone like a Rins or a Marquez. I think he can take that step, though. And if he does, and the Suzuki is still as strong as it is on race day, I think Mir could be a favorite for the title to repeat after his first one last year.
Yeah, what do you make of it, King?
I mean, it's gonna be hard for them to, like, I don't want to say that they can't defend the championship, but it's seeming very unlikely, and it's sort of Suzuki in a situation where they need to find where their footing in the field is, especially with the rest of the MotoGP field being so competitive. They're gonna have to find where they want to be in the field.
That's kind of the weird thing with Suzuki, is they've never really found that. in their time back in the sport, they're always fluctuating up and down the field. But last year, they were the only team that was consistently at the front every round, whereas Yamaha would reel off two race wins in a row and then barely score points. Same with Ducati. They won the championship last year, not through punishing everyone on speed, but instead punishing the constant mistakes everyone else was making.
Oh, yeah. They were solid in races. They know the qualifying pace has to come up.
That's their big focus, I think.
But their race runs still rock solid in testing.
Oh, it's the best. Yeah. It's the best bike in terms of race pace. The question is, how much work do they give themselves to do on Saturday?
Yeah, as Lewis points out in that chat, there is no obvious weak point in this team. The bike is rock solid where it counts, and I'd argue that's race pace more than qualifying pace. They have two outstanding riders. It's as good a lineup as anyone in the field.
It's a true jack of all trades team.
Yeah, there is no standout obvious asset, but there is no obvious weakness either. Maybe the restructuring could have an issue behind the scenes. We'll have to wait and see as the season goes on. They're a difficult team to place, especially given there were better looking teams in Qatar over the course of the test. But if they're solid out of the box in Qatar, they'll be stronger down the road, certainly.
Think we need to keep in mind the second part of that idiom. Like, they might be the jack of all trades, but there's a master of none.
That didn't stop me last year.
The master of consistency in this case was enough last year. Is it going to be this year? Just going to have to wait and see how it plays out.
So yeah, there's a lot to break down there. It's like it's a lot, but will be very fascinating to see where they chime in. Should we talk about Ducati, the quote reigning manufacturer's champions? their first world title in 13 years last year, which is a weird thing to even say about Ducati in a season that I think was pretty disappointing from all parties last year. Some flashes, some bright spots, certainly, but...
You never would have guessed they were constructors' champions looking at their season last year until you saw the final points tally.
Champions, yeah. In spite of their best intentions.
Somehow. Quote, without Andrea Dovizioso, the factory team is leaning all in on a youth movement led by Aston TC winner Jack Miller and 2018 Moto2 champion Francesco Bagnaia. With Miller and Bagnaia, Pramac Racing were arguably the best Ducati team in the fleet. They'll be starting over with two-time Moto2 champion Johann Zarco, who's continuing his career recovery, and 2018 Moto3 champion Jorge Martin. And if anyone calls him the Martinator on this podcast, I will be forced to fight you. do not do that. Then you got his sponsor Armour Racing, the artists formerly known as Avincia, are bottom feeders no longer, and they'll be going all in with two premier class rookies, the reigning Moto2 champion Enea Bastianini and Luca Marini, the Moto2 championship runner-up from last season. Now, Ducati, let's go from the top. Now, we all know that 2020 was a bit of a disaster. I mean, it's never a good sign when one of the manufacturer's greatest riders, Andrea Dovizioso, a man who won him 14 Grand Prix, was a championship runner-up three times, walks away from the negotiating table.
It's not a good look when he's making jokes about his future unemployment on his riding leathers.
It's not a good sign when Andrea Dovizioso and the leader and technical guru of the team haven't spoken in about a year and a half.
Dovizioso is that person who is asking on Twitter, their followers on Twitter, whether they should dump them nicely or just dump a whole bother. They're basically asking how they should divorce their partner on social media.
That would be the Ducati way of handling a breakup, certainly. They'd be dragging them on Twitter and hoping people like it in response. It's a brand new team, and it's one of them expected. Jack Miller was pretty much always going to be here this year. He had clearly outgrown what Pramac had put on the table for him. I'm a little bit surprised still they went Bagnaia over Zarco. But I think it's certainly a high risk, high reward team. Because I know we were talking about this before we started recording. It's like Jack Miller's ticks a lot of boxes. He was really good last year. He was top Ducati 5 times. It was a big reason why Ducati did win the manufacturer's title we joke about last year.
No, he was the reason they won the constructors last year.
Yeah, and despite all of that, do you really want to pick him for the big one? It's like, you don't really think Miller couldn't, could he? You just go,
Miller seems to be at his best when his back's up against the wall or when nobody expects him to win. Like, hell, nobody expected him to win the TTS in a few years back until he did. Nobody expected him.
Yeah, but if you're leading the Ducati factory team, and last year with what we know happened and what ended up being the opening round, it was the most open goal they ever could have had, and they threw out their back on the kick.
Yeah.
And just suffered all the way through the year, not really understanding the new tires. Clearly, Davi was done with that team and everyone in it. Jack Miller, I think Dre's right. I think he ticks all of the boxes. I just don't know if he's going to have the equipment to take the fight to the big boys this year.
Now that he is one of the big boys. There is one guy, though, Cam, that you are all in on the hype train, though, and that is the other half of this factory team.
I'm all in on the hype if he can get it under control, because Bagnaia's peaks are so high. When he's good, he is box office to watch. When he's bad, he's tumbling end over end into a gravel trap. And the balance on that is nowhere near the former to pick him as a title favorite. But I do think he's going to take a step this year as far as just learning when to just take the points and not shooting for the moon, because I think that's Pecco's biggest problem right now.
It's a very high-risk, high-reward team. It's like, this is the first year I think there's now genuine aspirations and expectations out of Miller, and he's now leading one of the biggest names in the business. This is the number one seat at Ducati, a seat that's been Dovi's for the last 4 years now. Like, this is no longer Miller the plucky underdog, it's now Miller the title contender.
Look at your predecessors. Andrea Dovizioso, Valentino Rossi,
yeah,
Casey Stoner.
Yeah. You're talking all-time greats now. You're talking about some of the biggest names in the business. Whether he can lead that charge, I think his riding ability is going to be under greater scrutiny than ever before this year as well. So it's going to be fascinating to see how Miller plays up when the expectations, when the goalposts have been pushed to bigger heights now for him. Because this is no longer just a guy that was going to be scoring the odd podium. We're now talking about being expected to win. But Miller ticks a lot of boxes on paper. He's a great qualifier. He had a handful of podium finishes. He was unlucky not to win a couple of rounds last year. Like, he just missed out in Styria.
I think he has the right mentality.
Yeah.
He has the mentality. He has that it factor of, we saw it in his wheel-to-wheel battles last year, late in the year, where he was doing everything he could and achieving the pass, and then the duck would just understeer off the apex and he'd get caught up by a Yamaha.
Couldn't hold it.
Textbook.
Yeah, we had two of those at the end of the year against Frankie Morbidelli, and he went 1-1. He got revenge at Portimao a week afterwards when Morbidelli beat him for the win in Valencia. He's got flashes. It looks promising. I think I just need to see more. And it's the same with Bagnaia. The promise is there. Tucked the front too many times last year. But the raw ability is off the charts. We saw what happened at the Emilia-Romagna GP, where he should have won that race. I know Maverick was starting to take time out of him towards the end, but that would have been a fascinating race.
Good luck passing that thing, because we always have to address the Ducati ace in the hole. Their straight line speed in preseason testing was goddamn ridiculous. They have that advantage back.
The
question is, is the bike good enough in the corners for that to actually matter?
Indeed, and we'll have to wait and see how that plays out. Oh, fun fact, Johann Zarco unofficially broke the MotoGP all-time speed record in the middle of that test. 223 miles an hour on that Duke.
That's fast.
Well,
356, I think that
guitar,
one.
Don't they?
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's three. I think it was 356 in Queen's English. Fast, just to say the least. We'll talk a little bit about the satellite teams. I mean, first of all, Pramac, and Johann Zarco is a very solid pair of hands. Do not get it twisted. The standing performances he had at Ducati, and again, there were moments at the Vintia where he looked really, really fast still. So, like...
An Avintia,
last year's bike, you know, sexy long lap penalties aside, you know, so...
Oh, that was still so good. Zarco, we know he has the speed. He proved it almost immediately when he stepped up to MotoGP.
Mm.
He's also been involved in some incidents that were quite terrifying last year.
Yeah.
Been through the wars, that man.
Yeah. His ability to balance risk and reward, not so sure on.
What do we think about the kids? What do we think about Martin, Marini, Bastianini? Now, I know Marini and Bastianini are going to be on older bikes. But between those three, who do you think stands a chance of being the most impressive?
Ooh, hard to say. I like Martin
for this year. Out of those three.
Yeah. Martin's definitely in the best position because he's got a 2021 bike. And let's not forget, he was like a COVID test away from being in that title fight in Moto2.
Yeah, that's where his season pretty much fell apart when he tested positive for COVID while on holiday. He was right up there. And if there's one thing that will always stand out about Martin, it's the opposite of what us pundits would often say is deceptive speed. He has a in-your-face speed.
What I like to call it with Marquez is having a fist fight with the motorcycle all the way around the track. He's box office to watch, and he makes it work. He's very, very fast.
Indeed. And again, the clear advantage, he has the 2021 bike, the two Avintias do not. Also, keep an eye out for Marini. It's the Sky Racing VR46 bike as well, because we're going to be seeing two different bikes from the same team with two different sponsor colors, because Rossi bought out one seat and not two.
Well, what does VR46 have to do with Luca Marini?
Nothing at all. We don't mention it at any point in this podcast. Isn't that right, RJ?
Valentino Rossi's half brother is carrying sponsorship for the VR46 team. So this is kind of like a quasi VR46, but it's Avintia, but it's not Avintia officially because it's a sponsor.
The bones of Avintia with the muscles and sinew of VR46.
That was a very strange way of putting it, but we'll go with that.
It's about the only way we can.
Indeed. It's Rossi dabbling his toes in the water before having the full-on team that he's always dreamed of, which is funny because Rossi said in an interview a couple days ago, he still thinks he's got two more years in him. So,
he's just not going to stop.
No, there'll be a skeleton in that thing. It'll be like Ghost Rider by the time he's 50.
He will not log off.
No, never.
By the way, what was Ghost Rider's MotoGP track record?
Very good. Took a lot of souls. Anyway,
he had to take a detour through the graveyard next to the track, though.
It helps. Right, so that breaks down pretty much all the Ducati, and a lot of raw potential, a lot of talent on that factory. A lot of question marks, but also some very, very fast guys on there. I've got a feeling this team is either going to be really good or really bad, and I'm not quite sure where I sit on that.
There's going to be no in-between. I think Miller can be a little bit of that in-between because I think he's consistent enough. Everything else is either going to be... It's just going to be mayhem. In a good way or a bad way. We don't know yet.
Yeah.
Entertain me, Ducati.
It is strange when Miller is like the safest pair of hands out of the six dudes on your payroll. Like, I'm not entirely... I'm not sure if that's a good or a bad thing. It's very high risk, but we'll have to wait and see how we go. Oh, this next one's going to be fun.
On the subject of things that can either go really good or really bad, it's
oh boy.
The Yamaha factory, including Patronus Yamaha SRT. The times are changing at Yamaha, with the promotion of three-time premier class race winner Fabio Quartararo to the factory team to partner Moto3 champion Maverick Vinales. Vinales and Quartararo, on their day and with the universe in alignment, have elite pace. But can they finally make a consistent bid for a championship in the top flight? Valentino Rossi isn't content to walk away just yet. The 9-time world champion, 7-time premier class champion, moves to SRT to keep his fight for a total of 10 titles alive. In the other quarter, though, Franco Morbidelli seeks another year of giant slaying excellence on a 2-year-old bike.
How do we feel about this one?
Oh, Lord. I don't know how successful they're going to be, but the Fab and Mav show are going to be entertaining as all hell.
Those two are going to hate each other. They're going to hate each other.
There will be violence. One way or another. We're bringing back Road Rash for the 21st century. There is two secret weapons here that I think people want to address. Fabio Quartararo has now got a sports psychologist, which is a big deal. I respect and appreciate the fact the man realized that maybe his mental game for the nature of his job was maybe a little lacking, because we all saw how his season collapsed towards the end of last year. Maverick has something that I think a lot of people do not take on board until it happens to them. Big dad energy, because he's had a very busy off-season. He got married to his longtime sweetheart, and he's going to be a dad later this year, fingers crossed. He's got a baby girl due later on in the year, so daddy's coming home, everybody. Kids change people. Like, it motivates them. I happened to be in school so many times where guys just develop. But on a more serious note, if they get the operating window right, they're going to win the championship. There is no doubt in my mind
about that. Is the same thing we've said about Yamaha every year since 2017, because yeah. Yamaha are the kings of the hypotheticals, and nowhere is that more prevalent than with continuing and lead rider Maverick Vinales.
No, right. King of practice. I just need to take one brief little tangent here. Dre, how many dads were in your school? How many grades became dads?
How many people in Dre's school were getting their fuck on?
Too many.
Okay, back to you.
back on track.
But
Maverick can't keep doing this.
No.
We can't keep hyping him up every year. He can't keep setting great times in testing and practice and qualifying, only to get into the race and fold like cheap cardboard. He can't keep being king of the hypotheticals. He has to put it together in the race. We know he's fast enough. We know he's great wheel-to-wheel.
He's the best front runner in MotoGP. That's not entirely a backhanded compliment.
No, look, I'm with RJ. He still is. Like, if he has a bike that can get to the front of the field, he wins. It's as simple as that. It's even more of a lock than a Marquez win at up the front. If Vinales has the pace, he's untouchable at the front of a Grand Prix. It's as simple as that.
Ifs and buts and candies and nuts and all that good stuff.
That's the problem.
Yeah,
and as Luce,
last year he didn't have the tools to do that.
No.
He was shortchanged on practice due to Yamaha's universe brain engine strategy that cost him the Constructors' Championship, probably. And too many things have to go right for Maverick to be effective.
Right. It's a very, very narrow window. And I say this, we're saying this about a manufacturer that won 50% of the Grand Prix last season, but they were so spread out that it ultimately didn't matter. It's a very strange scenario. It's Lewis points out some great tidbits in the chat here. It's like, quote, he was fighting with one hand behind his back last year. He could not do long runs in practice. Last season, it's why we often saw Maverick at the top of timing sheets in practice. They couldn't do long runs. They were running obviously to the wire on engine usage. So they had to obviously mitigate a lot of that in practice and try and reduce running as much as they could. And this year in testing, he's working on his starts. Front row, hold shot, fast lap times.
He put it perfectly, and Lewis mentioned it in our chat.
Mm.
Yamaha's only way to win with their current engine deficit to pretty much everyone, even Suzuki, the other inline four in the grid, is to get on the front row, get the whole shot, and run for their fucking lives.
They cannot win in a dogfight, because the only way they can beat another bike head-to-head on the field is under braking. That's all they've got.
Yeah.
Like, all the other bikes have got weapons at their disposal. How many times did we see in the last couple of years that whenever Maverick had a fight with Marquez, Marquez would just blow past him on a straight, and then when he finally put stamina down.
In 2019, Marquez played with his food for 20 laps, and then on the final lap, open the throttle all the way and suck the paint off the Yamaha.
Yeah, you see that and you realize, oh my god, he was playing possum the last 20 laps. He just go bang and off he goes. It's like, what was that? Next thing you know, he's half a second ahead by the first corner, because that's... Everybody knew that Yamaha
that's just
had got...
the power of... That used to be just the power of the V4s due to their inherent engine advantage, but even Suzuki's surpassed Yamaha in straight line speed now.
Yeah. They have the slowest bike in a straight line out of anybody, and that's going to be a problem, because a lot of these tracks, there is still at least one point on a track where you're touching 200 miles an hour. Maybe more in certain tracks cases. So it's going to be a problem. Like I said, the only weapon they've got in their arsenal besides front running speed is braking power, and it's not enough of an advantage to beat any other major manufacturer in a head-to-head. They have to...
All they can do is just get out there and hot lap and try and wield that corner speed that's... It's always been the signature of the Yamaha, but now everyone else has made enough inroads that unless Yamaha can be alone out on track, they just can't use it.
Yeah. Warbit Eddie quoted it quite well from Lewis in the chat. It says, quote, we have a bike to win. Not to fight, but to win. And that's coming from the man that had to scrap for a couple of his wins last year. And
Morbidelli.
Last year's runner-up.
Dude.
Great dude.
Rider of the year candidate in my eyes. And I gotta say, if he replicates that success again on a two-year-old bike, I think that's just a great galaxy brain strategy by Yamaha to give him the only old secondhand equipment to make his stock look better if he does well.
He specifically requested not to have the 2020 bike.
I want this
because
bike.
He's better Leave on the 19.
Leave it alone. it's very funny. Relative to other motorsport, maybe Ferrari. For the most part, you wouldn't say you wanted the old car. But yeah, Morbidelli sticking with the 2019 bike for another year. Runner-up in the championship last year.
Won three races.
Wins. Look to be the strongest Yamaha rider mentally in a fight. He's a fighter. He will get his elbows out. He will do his damnedest to win and to get the best result he can.
I love me some Morbo.
Yeah, he's a great rider. He really is. Like this was like last year was the breakout year for him, without a doubt.
A little bit late. We expected him to slaughter Quartararo in the first year. It was the opposite. Then last year, Morbidelli came good.
Yeah. Took advantage of the 2019 bike, was really strong towards the end of the season. If he wasn't caught up in a couple of places of traffic, I think he could have made a legitimate run for the title. And look, Yamaha claimed COVID-19 and budget cuts are the reason why they can't give him a 2021 bike. It's horse shit. It's pure horse shit. They're hedging their bets. They know Morbidelli is good on that bike. They know he's got excellent race pace on that machine. They're hedging their bets.
And they don't know. They don't know if their current bike is better than the 2019 bike. The M1 is more based on the 2019 bike than last year's bike was.
Yeah. They're still searching, trying to find the magic formula, it seems, because it all boils down to the same point, wanting to extend their operating window, where if they hit the window, they win. If they don't hit the window, they're fighting for fifth or
sixth
place.
They struggle for points.
Yeah.
It was worse by the end of last year. They could barely score points.
Yeah, it was really bad towards the end of the year, like bottom five of the points, like 10 to 15 sort of range. Last year.
That's like Yamaha either blow Yamaha.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. They either blow supernova hot or absolute zero cold.
Now,
they need to find something that's just they need to find something where it's not a pinhole where that bike works.
And you know what's funny as well? We've talked about all of this and we still haven't mentioned Valentino Rossi yet, who is going to be on a 2021 bike with his new team, a Petronas.
Yeah. That's the guy from that really weird BT Sport commercial.
Please stop. Log off. You're done.
Nobody in their right mind thinks he's still in the league. Yeah, he's still in the league. Nobody in the right mind thinks he's going to win number 10 unless they are part of the BR46 fan club. But it's cool to see him extend his MotoGP career like this.
And he was
way beyond anybody else's reason.
He wants two more years, and he wants to be a dad. I actually read the interview he had with Pocono GP. It was actually a really nice interview. It was about everything that wasn't to do with bike racing. He talked a lot about having COVID-19 and how he felt genuinely sad and lonely, you know, suffering through that and having to isolate for all that time. And he talked about wanting to be a father, which was actually quite wholesome to hear about a man in his 40s now talking about becoming a first-time dad, maybe.
He's going to put that... wonder if he's going to wear that Viagra helmet on during sex.
Well, we know which vaccine he's taken.
Shoot me up with that Pfizer right now, Doc.
This one's for you, Mark Martin.
I think that COVID vaccine had a little extra product in it.
Some extra spice. So are we going to see over the course of the season, he's going to bring back the Viagra helmet with like less and less pills in the packet as the season goes on? God bless him.
Yeah, I think Valentino really needed a change of scenery. I think his time had run its course on him with the factory Yamaha team.
Yeah.
And I like how he put it. They can change her dress. It's still my M1. Mm-hmm. And on a 2021 bike, I don't think he's going to do as poorly as some people might be thinking. I don't know if he's going to necessarily be going for race wins, but I think we'll see a little bit of a revitalized Rossi this year.
Yeah, I would love to see that. I'd love to see him get at least one more win before he hangs up. I'm not thinking 10 championships. Right. I think that ship has long sailed. It has sailed far away into the ocean and then gotten beached and clogged up the Suez Canal.
And what I was going to say was, a lot of this might be down to Quartararo's performances on it last year, but on paper, he's joined the better Yamaha team. So, you know, it could stand for a positive spin for Valentino out of all of this. So, yeah, one to certainly keep an eye on. Now, next on the list...
And we didn't actually talk about that guy that came into last year talking all that good shit, reeled off two wins, and then folded quite badly.
Yeah. Mm. Well, we mentioned it briefly. I mean, like I said, man's hired a sports psychologist, which I think was a very shrewd move from him. I think he struggled towards the end of last season. He openly admitted, I think he'd struggled towards the end of last year. The pressure of the title fight got too much for Fabio. But we are still talking about a, 22-year-old kid here in his third season in the sport. He's a phenomenal talent. Like, Jesus, he is fast as hell.
His sheer speed is just unreal. It's good. And I think this last year, I think, will have taught him something that maybe it's better to walk before you can run.
Because on sheer,
after Marquez went down, well, even before Marquez went down, he was talking himself up as the main challenger. After Marquez went down, we thought he would have been the favorite alongside Davi, and that just the wheels fell off.
None of that very
quickly
out
on his title challenge.
Right. No, what I was going to say is that in terms of raw speed, it's Mark, Maverick, and Fabio, and then it's everybody else. That is the elite trio when it comes to raw, top-end, ultimate pace in this sport. That in itself is a huge asset. If in the MotoGP qualifying session, pretty much until the middle of last year, it was one of those three on pole. Pretty much guaranteed.
Raw speed helps you everywhere. It can hide a lot of problems if you're just that fast.
Yeah. And yeah, if he gets the mental game down, look out. There's no reason why he can't win this championship, as far as I'm concerned. So, yeah, I think he's an immediate favorite if he keeps his head screwed on. Like, if he's that fast, he's going to be a problem for everybody in the field. Big problem. Speaking of big problems,
I think we'll let King take this one.
I'm not reading that.
I'll read it for him.
KTM, they're no joke anymore. And two of the riders that helped finally establish them as a winning constructor are now the leading men of the factory team, Brad Binder and Miguel Oliveira, who combined for 3 wins last season. Danilo Petrucci is moving over to Satellite Outfit Tech 3. The well-liked veteran will partner sophomore Iker Lecuona, who hopes for better results and fortune in his second year. King, Binder, Oliveira, Petrucci,
Lecuona. The Lord and the Dentist together at last.
It feels like me being the optimist here. Well, say, feels like we're in a situation similar to Suzuki, where we're definitely not going to win the championship, but I hope we find our footing somewhere in the top third of the field, please.
This is less optimism and more desperation from King. Not a great test, and they did admit that this track really does not suit what the KTM's all about.
No.
I don't know with KTM. It feels like every time they take a step forward, they take a step forward for a year, and then they take 2 steps back the next
year. Can we agree that they're not bottom feeders anymore?
Like, they're no longer backmarkers.
Definitely
they're
not.
No longer so bad that one of their riders just up and quits in the middle of the year.
We've come
I'm
a long way.
So sure. I think they're either going to reach higher heights than they did last year, or they're going to kind of crash back down into the middle of the points.
And you know what? That'd be a real shame, because you think of the core of what's made KTM what it's been in the last 5 years. The two dudes I would circle on the top of that list are Brad Binder and Miguel Oliveira, all the way through the classes. This was destiny. This was always going to end up being this KTM team at some point.
This was written in the stars.
Yeah. Binder won a world title. Oliveira, runner-up in Moto2, runner-up in Moto3. One of the most, I still think, even with the 2 wins he got last year, one of the most underappreciated talents in all of the MotoGP. He's a fantastic rider. He really is. Been saying that since he was in Moto3.
Dre, what you said about the raw pace, the raw pace standings. I would put Brad Binder maybe not with the 3 mentioned, but just below them.
Needs better equipment to really prove it, but Binder isn't. Is it like, if Binder is dialed in, he is an insanely fast rider. Like,
real good, y'all.
It was, watching him during his win last year.
Oh my God.
That was man and machine perfectly merged together. It was box office.
The thing is, though, they're going to be leaving big shoes to fill because Paul Espargaro was a weapon for this team last year. And if anything...
Paul Espargaro, the best bad bike rider on Earth.
Yeah, he really is. And look, Paul left a lot of points on the table last season. That was the biggest problem I had with Paul Espargaro. He actually had, I think it was 5 podiums last year, but they were all third places. And there were races he could and maybe argue should have won, like in Brno, that the Bin the Miracle probably should have been a Paul Espargaro win. He had more raw pace than Binder on the day, but of course got caught up with Zarco's incident. And yeah, they are still very raw, still kind of new, but they have two insanely talented riders and a bike that can actually win races now. Yeah. On their day, it's a good formula on paper.
Mm-hmm. How we feel about Tech 3?
What is Tech 3? Get out of my head, RJ. I'm feeling
orange.
Very mid on one seat and pretty high on the other.
Orange is how I feel about that team. It's extremely orange. I think they actually won Simon Patterson's livery championship.
You should have taken your walls, painted them orange. Worn an orange shirt.
Yeah!
Stained your desk orange. Because that's how orange this Tech 3 is.
Ooh,
I actually...
Orange arrows from the early 2000s F1.
The thing is, the Tech 3 bike looks far closer to an actual KTM factory bike than the actual KTM factory bike.
Right! Right!
Well, it gives you wings, what can I say?
Well, that's kind of the dynamic the Tech 3 has had, is really they're more like a factory B rather than a true satellite team.
They all get the same parts, so yeah, there's no...
all on factory bikes.
Yeah.
Danilo... Dre, your usual line of if the best thing you can say about a driver is that they're a really nice dude, there's probably a problem. In the dry, in the wet, Petrucci's phenomenal. One of the best in the field, if not the best.
Oh yeah,
number one in my opinion.
We've seen that time and time again. In the dry,
best wet rider in the world. Eh. He's the best wet weather rider in the world. In my opinion, he's been every time it's rained in the last 5 years, Petrux has been a factor. Pretty much every single time.
He's got to win in the dry. Yeah. 2 years.
It was on a Ducati in Austria.
Mugello. It was. And that was phenomenal three wide final. Yeah. It was Mugello.
I was thinking of that one.
Yeah. It's strange because it's like, Petrucci started his time at the factory Ducati team well, had that win, immediately declared, I'm helping Dovi win the title, and he's never been the same guy since.
No, because Marquez heard him say that, and Marquez chose violence for the rest of 2019.
I was like, no, you don't, Sunshine. Now, of course, I think some of that is Ducati's development. We've talked about how their relationship with riders weren't great. We all knew, essentially, you know, Petrucci was a dead man walking going into 2020. We all knew Miller was taking his seat. There was already rumblings about that towards the end of 19. There was like, oh, we might swap him for Valencia. So Petrucci was always a dead man walking. So
you can't do that. You can't put your garage into that level of disarray.
No.
It's a mess.
Yeah, it was a hot mess.
I think Petrucci's going to be glad to get out of that environment.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know what to make of Lecuona and MotoGP this go-around. I hope for better.
We've seen flashes. We've seen really good flashes. Yeah. We've seen a lot of not-so-great flashes.
He's no Christoph Pansone.
that's a reference.
Damn, please.
Whew. No, like, he's got flashes in him. He looks like a guy that doesn't look out of place in this class, and that's always a good start. Whether he can build on that, whether he can run along, he's got 3 very, very good riders around him. That's the problem. You're like Binder, Oliveira, and I think Petrucci is definitely better.
The problem with KTM is not the riders.
No, it's the bike. And getting that
they have a
right.
Treasure trove of excellent riders.
We're
the bike was a lot better last year. Lewis talked about it in our chat here. Qatar, maybe hold off on judging that. If they have issues in Portimao, they're probably screwed.
Yeah. That's going to be the litmus test. And remember, Miguel Oliveira just cleaned everybody's clock in that race a year ago.
Grand Slam victory down. Last year. Like, it was a Grand Slam victory. Pole, win, fastest lap, led every lap over the line and won by 4 seconds. It was
the
arguably
most
the
underappreciated ass whooping I have ever seen in the year 2020.
And a year that didn't really have very many of those, amazingly. But yeah, like, two of the biggest flashpoints of the year came directly from Miguel Oliveira. That win in Portimao and that overtake in Styria. He's box office. Oh. Keep an eye on that KTM team. It's going to be very, very fun to watch. The KTM team, if Petrux goes back to his Pramac form, you'll be very, very good.
Very good shape.
Yeah.
And I think I think this is a little bit of a mental reset for him.
Yes.
If he can get into that headspace, I think it's going to be a much better year than it was.
And I'm pulling for him because he is such a nice bloke. He really is one of those lovely
guys. One of the nicest guys in the paddock.
Like, no one has ever had a bad word to say about Petrux, ever. Apart from Alicia Spagaro. So we didn't believe him because no one ever takes Alicia Spagaro's side in an argument. Even when Jorge Lorenzo's involved.
This is jumping the gun a bit. Do people take Alicia's side more than they do Jorge Lorenzo's side in an argument? In 2021?
I'll get back to you on that one.
It's time. It's time. It's the moment you've all been waiting for. Honda.
Repsol Mark. Honda.
Mark LCR Marquez. Honda. Mark Marquez is finally back. Well, soon.
No.
Soon. He will miss the first two rounds in Qatar, with another doctor's appointment scheduled just before round three in Portimao. Convenient. For now, former KTM ace Pol Espargaró will lead Repsol Honda to start the year, as both he and Marquez, when he returns, aim to pull this team out of the doldrums of their worst season since the oval piston nightmare of 1981. Alex Marquez flipped the switch and turned it on in the second half of 2020. And now at LCR alongside Taka Nakagami, the satellite Honda team features two current factory bikes for the first time and have two riders hungry for their first top-class victory.
What a shambles last year was for Honda. Alex Marquez dropped from the factory team before he'd even turned the wheel in anger, and then Marquez snaps his arm. The mother load came down on Repsol Honda very quickly.
Every ounce of hubris they've tried to ignore, all their laziness with just letting Mark do all the work while their bike continually got worse and worse, was thrown right back in HRC's face.
Me, raping. Yeah, this is awesome! Mark Marquez is winning this on his sheer riding ability and his loan! Wait, what the fuck?
his arm isn't supposed to bend that way.
And Honda, like a Michael Jordan documentary, took that personally.
Yep, because Honda probably have the most changed bike compared to last year. Pretty much everything rearward of the engine is new. And in testing, it looked pretty good. And to the surprise of many, Pol Espargaró adapted to that Honda pretty much immediately. On the second day, he already looked very much at home with it.
For those guys who don't know, Stefan Bradl will fill in for the first two rounds on that Repsol Honda. Yeah. There'll be no shock call to Andrea Dovizioso, even though he put his head through the door last month saying, "Hey Honda, if you need another rider, you know."
we're already through with you.
We tried you in 2010, Honda. Dovi.
Honda also crashed a lot in preseason testing, as this bike is still, despite their attempts to tame it, a little bit violent.
I was going to say, RJ, do your favorite Booker T impression again?
Tell me, we did not just say that.
The amount of times Alex Marquez crashed in preseason testing.
Oh, yeah, where he crashed five times.
Five times, so including one where he broke his fourth metatarsal in his right foot.
See, my mind, I was wondering which Booker T line you wanted me to say.
There's a lot, to be fair. yeah, it's like, he hit us with that Wayne Rooney 2004 metatarsal injury. Yeah, he had to sit down for a whole day of testing because of that injury. He was declared unfit.
Alex was like, oh, I've done this before. It hurts, but I mean, I'll be fine.
Yeah, so, there's a lot to break down. As it's very much an experimental brand new bike. Paul Espargaró looks quick, but trying to find the sweet spot is going to be probably the difficulty in Honda going forward. And of course, the $1 million question: just when is Marc Márquez due back? And
that
if
is
so,
where this entire season depends on that April 12th doctor's appointment, because if he comes back for round three and Mans was on the road going MotoGP bike, the one that Honda built in 2015, how convenient that, you can't test race spec bikes. So we just built one that you can ride on the road.
Yeah.
Production bike.
The RC213 VS.
Yeah, he was already hammering the front tire into the ground, as Marc Márquez
was.
If loves
you
to
had
do.
Any worries that Marc Márquez was going to look rattled, rusty,
no,
or
not
shell
in
of
the
his
least.
Former self once he got back on a bike, I'm here
I love
to
the
tell
progression.
You right now.
RJ, I love the progression of it. Day one, he was allowed back on a bike. He was on a mountain bike.
Mm-hmm.
And then they put him on a mini bike the next day.
Yeah.
And then 5 days after that, he was on arguably the fastest production bike the world has ever seen.
Yeah.
And it's not a Suzuki Hayabusa for a change.
Indeed.
Because he's not riding it with his helmet strapped to the back. That's a reference for y'all kids.
RJ, I swear, if Marc Márquez shows up to the third race with gauged earrings, I am punching you right in the mouth.
if he's back for Portimao at 70%, he's immediate title favorite.
Yeah.
Who else can we say in motorsport? Oh yeah, he's 70%. He's gonna win the title.
None. He's the biggest freaking. he's the biggest freak athlete I've ever seen in motorsport. God. That he's Sorry. The only guy I talk about in this sort of context. Like he could come back and probably not be 100% and still be competitive. Probably.
I remember when Marc Márquez was just in the premier class telling people that don't give a shit about motorcycle racing, just like, yo, look at this dude. Look at the way he rides with his elbows dragging on the pavement.
Yeah, yeah. Day one on the RC213 VS, he was dragging his right elbow.
Yeah. Elbow down with the bad arm. The man is fearless, but I think that's also why he sat down with the doctors a couple of days ago and said, look, doctor's decision.
They checked up on the bone, mm-hmm. and where Mark wants to be is, we know how Márquez finds the limit. Mm-hmm. He goes into practice and wipes
and goes over
a couple bites to find where the limit is. He can't do that while his arm is still healing. So he wants to be at the stage where if he falls again, the arm isn't going to be a worry that is going to refracture. And that's the right play. He's thinking long term. Right, he's thinking, I could either come back too early, maybe win, or end my own career, or wait a little longer, come back, probably still win, and not end his own career, and probably rack up a few more championships.
Yeah, he's got a really good chance. If he's clear for Portimao, he's got a good chance. Even with the two races he misses, he could still win the championship. I mean, I know that's the coldest take in the book, but it's true.
Well, and even that, what we talked about all through the season preview is how there's different people who have chances this year, because no one is this overwhelming title favorite. Except him. He can come back, and unless one rider wins the two opening races and is just reeling off race wins left and right, which is the opposite of what happened for our champion last year, where Mir came close to winning the title without winning a race.
Yeah.
Márquez could realistically win 10 races this year.
It wouldn't be outside the realms of possibility. And look, like that, if he comes back and ports him out, at worst, he's down 50. And he probably won't be, given how last season played out. We had no hot streak. We had no guy really go on a run. I don't think two races I would constitute as a
streak.
The
podium streak.
Yeah.
It was the podium streak for Mir.
And if the rest of the field beat each other up, it only makes the door that much wider for Marquez and runs them over whenever he's allowed to come back. You know, so we'll have to wait and see how this plays out. My gut tells me he'll be back for Portimao. And if he is, everybody's immediately on notice.
Another fun note from his recovery. Walking into the hotel where everyone was training, and everyone's jaws hitting the floor.
Yeah.
Talk about Rep Swole Honda.
Yeah, he was
Rep
Swole
Honda.
I did get the story about this. Apparently, he'd flown out to Doha only to get the vaccine because MotoGP decided to take Qatar's offer of offering the vaccine to the paddock. Which they did. So Marquez flew out to Doha to get his first jab of the vaccine, then fly back. And apparently he was in the gym where everyone else was training, and everyone's just like, sup? And there's Marquez in the gym training his arm, looking like he's a fucking gymnast.
I imagine him walking through the door, and it's like when the Minister of Magic saw Voldemort. He's like, he's back. We do not condone anything else that J.K. Rowling had a hand in. Mm.
15 minutes left.
To
talk about like Paul Scarborough doesn't look like buyer's remorse from Honda, which is good. Outs Marquez and Taka Nakagami. Oh, I want Outs and Taka to do well at LCR. Oh, I want them to do. They're so close last year.
Everyone's on a factory bike this year. Honda's realized that the best play is to get everyone on the same footing. And Taka got a pole, looked in contention for some wins last year. Moment was a little too big for him, and one of them where he just binned the bike immediately. Alex Neil very nearly won his first race.
Twice.
Another year of experience. Both Honda teams more or less being, as we mentioned with KTM, like a factory and factory B.
Mm-hmm. And
I think Pol's going to win some races this year. I saw him on that
maybe
Honda.
One.
He looked not as at home on it as Marquez does Marquez because whoever does, but he looked, for how evil that Honda has been the last few years, Pol looked to get on with it pretty well.
Yeah, because if there's one good surrogate for how evil that Honda is, would it not be a steel trellis frame KTM? The point I was going to make is that, like, you know, Pol's ridden some bad bikes. He's ridden some evil bikes.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
I think
the KTM where they were ripping engine bolts out to try and help the frame flex properly.
Yeah,
so,
there's a lot.
I think Pol's going to do well. I think Alex is a slow learner, as we've seen. A year under his belt is going to be a world of good. And Taka, please, please get that first win. I want to believe.
If anybody can do it, it's him. Aragon, he openly admitted, like, I've never seen a rider admit the whole situation was too much for him. That's an incredible amount of humility out of Taka Nakagami, bless his heart. Was in title contention pretty much three quarters of the way through the year of pure consistency that crash.
He was the only Honda worth a damn until they really started revising the bike and Alex came to the fore.
Yeah, until that crash in Aragon, only rider in the field that was in the top 10 every race, statistically. He's fast, did good stuff with Marquez's data last year. Alex Marquez, again, at his limit, we saw a couple of times last year, outstanding talents. My word, for a rookie to do that on a couple of occasions, I think, again, Le Mans in the rain and then Aragon in the dry, running pretty much toe-to-toe with Alex Rins, who's as good as anyone in the sport on his day. A bona fide multiple race winner. Very, Alex very impressive show. Disease. Yeah, the Alex and Alex show. That was a very impressive show indeed. So again, more of that, Alex, please, for the life of me. Let's get Aprilia out of the way. I'd like to nickname them the preseason champions, Aprilia.
Every year.
The tragedy of Aprilia's struggle to break out of MotoGP obscurity is that Fausto Gresini isn't here anymore. Vera and Alicia Spagaro will look to lead their forward progress, and Lorenzo Savadori is the unconventional choice for a golden chance in MotoGP, earned of a strong record in Superbikes and a good amount of spot starts in 2020. It wouldn't be Aprilia without controversy. They could not find a rider for that second seat for a good while. They tried Marco Bezzecchi, he turned them down. They tried Lorenzo, he turned them down. Iannone, no, he really is going to be banned for 4 years. he ain't
Roberts,
coming back.
Roberts, I want to stay where I have a chance to win.
Yeah, and then they dropped Bradley Smith for 3 rounds out towards the end of last year and put Lorenzo Savadori in for seemingly no reason. And now he's there with them in that second seat permanently, and Bradley's left the team altogether. Way to go, Aprilia. Maybe this will be the year.
For as good as they looked in testing, and they did look much better in testing last
much
year
better.
Than they have in
recent
years.
They looked so good, Andrea Dovizioso was just like, hey, can I get a redo?
yeah, he is going to test for them. I believe that was confirmed.
Next month, yeah.
It's as a manufacturer in MotoGP, they're just always the one treading the most water.
Yeah.
It always feels like they're really not supposed to be here. Despite
only
the
team
best
on concessions.
Of their riders. Yeah, they're the only team with concessions. They're the only ones who get to break the regulations to try and make their bike better. And that's despite the best efforts of the team, because we know Gresini and obviously Austin Power to Fausto Gresini. We know they're a quality team. We know Aleix is a phenomenal rider. The other half of the best bad bike riders in the world duo with his brother.
You know it's sad when the most marquee moment of Aleix Espargaró's preseason was a Twitter fight with Jorge Lorenzo.
But Jorge Lorenzo is always getting the Twitter
time.
Beef now.
That's his thing. He's become the Shannon Sharp of bike pundits. No, it really isn't.
Right, though?
He's the thing is, he's wrong up until the point he says, but I'm a 5-time world champion.
That makes a whole lot of problems go away, along with Lorenzo's love of cheese. Look, I don't expect anything out of Aprilia this year. Maybe a slight improvement over last year, but that's only because last year was about as bad as you could possibly go as a factory MotoGP team.
Mm-hmm. They'll obviously be a huge sentimental favorite, given circumstances. And Aleix is a solid rider. He's been a solid
always
rider
has been.
For over a decade in the sport. In Christmas, he was the king of the CRT class.
He was the king of the CRT class.
He's the second most experienced rider in the field now. He's one of only two dudes left who rode an 800. Valentino's the other.
Say he and Valentino. Wow. And he seems to be the only person who can consistently make the Aprilia do anything, because the other guy who could got himself banned.
I would love to see Lorenzo Savadori do well. I know Gresini was big on him, and that was part of the big reason that they looked to him when nobody else wanted that seat. It's an out-of-left-field choice, and I'm a sucker for those. I love when Toro Rosso got Brendan Hartley. I know it didn't work out, but I love that they even thought of it.
Pain. It's also pretty telling, isn't it, that they had to more or less beg and cry for anyone to get on the second seat at that team.
Joe Roberts knocked them back. Yikes.
A MotoGP rider who had like one good weekend, being the opening weekend of last year, and was otherwise kind of anonymous.
Yeah.
He was like, why would I stay here? Why would I go to you guys?
Yeah. here's hoping. You know, I would love to see them do well for Fausto's sake. He deserves a good Grassini team. A team that not really is challenged at the front.
Grassini deserves.
Yeah.
Grassini as a team deserves some respite from the pretty awful streak they've been on, because we know from the past that this is an incredibly high quality team.
Yeah. Here's hoping. Because they've not been really up the front since the days they had Alvaro Bautista ride for them back in 2013. Really was the last time we really saw Grassini up the front. And that was in a time where independents just didn't do that on a regular basis at all. So
I'd say that was on the production Honda, was it not?
Scott Redding was on the production Honda. Yeah, his teammate that year. Yeah, he deserved better as well. That was the year he was yanked. Like, the year before he was robbed of a Moto2 title because of a diamond cut Philip Island layout that nobody was prepared for. Broke his wrist that weekend. Never recovered. Yeah, it was. I've always had a level of empathy for old Scotty for that very reason. But yeah, it would be great to see a competitive Grassini again with the sentimental reasons behind it as well. But gentlemen,
well, please, and a final note on Aprilia, yep. Please keep the tribute to Fausto on the winglet on the front of the bike. That's a wonderful touch.
Yeah, please do. That'd be lovely. Gentlemen, who are you picking for the title?
Mark Marquez.
Yeah.
Mark Marquez. Even Mark. This is like the prop bet of Marquez -2, and he's still getting picked. Like, it's like those football, bets you do where the handicap's in play, and it's like, Man City -2 against Brighton. Still taking City. RJ?
It's hard for me to pick against Mark Marquez. It really is. If he's just missing two races, Marquez is my guy.
What, same for you, King?
Yeah, I said Marquez.
Yeah, well, that wasn't heard you there. I want to be that guy so bad and be a contrarian, but the logic in my head can't go against it. I would still probably take Marquez -3 to win the title, even if he debuted at Jerez. Like, that's just...
Jerez is round 4 or 5?
4.
Missing 3 races, and he's still your title favorite.
He's that good! He's that good! He's a cheat. He is motorsport's equivalent of the game genie. He's just that good. Like, he's just that cracked. It's ridiculous.
He is not a cheat code. He is the entire game genie.
Pretty much. That'll just about do it here, folks. We're really excited for this season. Like, if Marquez didn't exist, we'd have made this sound even more dramatic because we would have no idea. In fact, before we go, who's runner-up, then?
There you go!
Now everybody's scrambling!
I'm gonna go with... Go ahead, King.
Yeah, runner-up gut feeling. I have to go with Quartararo. Fabio Quartararo, runner-up.
I am gonna go with a spicy Jack Miller.
I think it's gonna be Yoann Mir.
4 different names. I'm gonna say Alex Rins.
Ooh.
4 different names for second. You'll keep an eye on that second bet over the course of this. I think that might be a bit more interesting than the first one because, again, I feel so bad for me. We joked about BT Sports commercial for the new season. He's not in it. I've mentioned it on our Substack page that
Mir's. You leave out your world champion.
Yeah. The man's got 25,000 Twitter followers. I know F1 fangirl accounts that have got more followers than Mir does. You know how bad that is? Like, Jesus.
Oh,
like,
my God.
I want him to be a megastar, because Mir is a very mature, well-disciplined, good boy.
I called him the
truth. He's a good boy. Good. Get behind Mir, people. Get behind him. Just don't pick him for second place in the championship unless your name's RJ. It's not a good world when John McPhee's got almost as many Twitter followers as he does. But, you know, it's...
God. God.
Yeah, I found that out the hard way. It was something that Lewis told me down the phone about 3 weeks ago. I was like, he's joking, right? And I checked it up and I was like, oh, for fuck's sake. I was just like, it was not a nice sight, but here we are. But yeah, we can't wait. It's the real main event this Sunday. Do not let the F1 race in Bahrain fool you here. As the 90 minutes runs out, we got that perfectly. That's just about on the money. It's perfect. This weekend, March 28th, bottom Qatar, first of two races down there. Can't wait. We'll be all there to talk about it in a separate podcast, probably episode 295 next week. But we'll wrap it up. YouTube.com/motorsport101. Don't forget, comment on Formula One's 2020 season preview part one. If you want a chance of an elite pro account on Fantasy GP, check that out if you haven't already. Facebook.com/motorsport101. Twitter @motorsport_101, @Harrison101HD, @RJ O'Connell, @RyanEricKing, and @CBuckley917 for our personal handles. We're on our website, motorsport101.com. We are on Patreon. Patreon.com/motorsport101. $5 gets you early access to all of the audio editions of our show. $10 for the supporters club, on our Discord server, and all the videos as well. You can check us out on Instagram as well, motorsport101pod, for updates, extra tidbits, all of that fun stuff as well. Thank you all very, very much for watching. Mainstream Motorsport back this weekend. Let the games begin. Until then, sayonara.
Later, y'all.
Bye.
How do I watch both races at once if I've only got one screen?